Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you. We have a really full program. The latest on health and healing, always citing the best peer-reviewed literature, including today from the University of Utah, how a plant-based diet is linked to a lower death from all kinds of conditions, how herpes zoster is linked to an increased rate of both stroke and myocardial infarction from London School of Hygiene Tropical Medicine, how certain antidepressants are linked to heightened risk of mania and bipolar disorder. Well, hold on. How about all those killers, shooters, who are on antidepressants? Mania, bipolar, easy to kill, easy to injure, British Medical Journal. And those who've been washing out wounds with soap and water? No, got something new for you from McMaster's University. And if you don't have enough zinc, according to Cornell University, you're not going to have good bacteria in your gut, and that is not good. From University of Alabama shows that a typical American diet can worsen all forms of chronic pain and more. The remainder of our program, with the exception of our guest, who will be in the second part, and our guest is a physician, Dr. Christine Horner. She's going to talk about protecting and fighting breast cancer naturally. She is a board-certified surgeon, physician, and she approaches women's health from a more non-invasive perspective. So we'll talk with her. But I'm going to address the entire group of Republican candidates and Democratic candidates on the issues that they're dealing with and not. I'll give you a progressive perspective, which we have not heard anywhere in this presidential campaign, and I believe that you should at least understand what the progressive perspective would be compared to what you're hearing. I watched the full two-hour discussion debate last night, and I'll respond. Let's begin. First off, from the University of Alabama, quote, "We need to be concerned about the consequences of our diet on our bodies, and not just immediately with problems like weight gain, but also long-term complications. That's what we set out to investigate in this study," end quote. Well, sufferers of chronic pain are more susceptible to prolonged and pronounced health issues when practicing poor dietary habits. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Pain. And what they found was that the poor diet, and that's most Americans are on a poor diet. Those who are overweight more often than not are on a poor diet. Diabetics, a poor diet. Those who suffer from heart disease, poor diet. They become hypersensitive and hence more susceptible to pain. Quote, "It is currently unknown whether increasing pain is due to greater weight or poor diet quality or both. This study shows us the direct link between poor diet quality and increased pain." So there we have it. So now we have a really good study published in a peer-reviewed journal done at the University of Alabama showing you when you eat the typical American diet, hot dogs, hamburgers, french fries, Cokes, Colas, bagels, you increase your sensitivity to pain, and if you have pain, it's worse. So, here's what it doesn't say, but is self-evident. By having a healthy diet, a primarily 75% alkalizing diet, fruits, vegetables, rutabaga, parsnips, kohlrabi, you are then supplying the body with nutrients that actually turn off pain. These suppress, along with vitamin C, coenzyme Q10, magnesium, they suppress cytokine, and the cytokines in the body exacerbate or create pain. In effect, a good diet is the fire extinguisher to put out the flame. A bad diet is throwing gasoline on the fire. It's that simple. Zinc deficiency, oh, by the way, for all of you who were in my last health support group behavior and lifestyle modification study, good news. Yesterday, a major publication, peer review, mainstream publication accepted it for publication. When it's published, I'll let you know and post it so you can read it, showing you that a good study with phenomenal results, and there are four others in line to be published, including those of you who are in the menopausal study, the arthritis study, the depression study. They're all up for publication in peer-reviewed literature. This is from Cornell University. A new study shows that zinc deficiency, a condition that affects 25% of the world's population, and especially in developing nations, makes a mess of the bacteria in your body. Quote, we are the first to show that zinc deficiency has a significant impact on the microbial population and diversity in the intestines. Now, the finding is important because previous studies have shown that many diseases and physiological conditions, including depression, diabetes, obesity, heart disease, are directly linked to the bacteria in your gut. So, zinc is easy to get. You can get it in pumpkin seeds, and you can get it from mushrooms. You can get it from a zinc tablet, just at 15 milligrams. Don't need much. It's inexpensive. So if you don't have it, your bacteria turns bad. If you do, it stays healthy. And the healthier the bacteria in your gut, the healthier you are. That's why fermented foods like sauerkraut and even non-dairy yogurts are so good for you. This was in the British Medical Journal, and here's what it says. Quote, taking certain antidepressants for depression is linked to a heightened risk of subsequent mania and bipolar disorder. The strongest association seemed to be for serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or the SSRIs, for short and dual action antidepressants, and the researchers based their findings on medical records of 21,000 adults in receipt of treatment for major depression, and from 2006 to 2013, so it's a good study. Now, why is this important? It's important because virtually all the major independent studies, meaning not done by a pharmaceutical company that's making an antidepressive drug, shows that taking a sugar pill is just as effective. But the sugar pill doesn't cause mania, doesn't cause suicidal ideation, doesn't cause akathisia, the inability to sit still. So now imagine this. You're diagnosed with a brain chemical imbalance, which has never been proven in science, ever. There's no studies to prove that. From a completely subjective set of analysis, there is no object of analysis for any psychiatric disorder. And then you're given a drug that definitely impacts your brain in a negative way. In fact, it was rather bizarre. And you'll see this in the new film, which will be out in the next 12 months, called Manufacturing Madness. And in it, you'll see one scene where a group of board-certified and highly respected and published psychiatrists have a completely normal person go into the office, but say they have some symptoms. Within minutes, the lowest was about 2.5 minutes, the psychiatrist diagnoses mental disorder and recommends a prescription medication. They all recommended different medications. They all had different diagnoses. Later approached on the street, and this you really got to see, sir, you just diagnosed this person with this condition. You gave him this prescription. Here's the side effects from the physician desk reference for this medication. It includes suicide. It includes hyperagitation. It includes all these side effects. And yet, the person's completely normal. How many other completely normal people are walking around with severe brain chemical imbalances due to the medication? And every single one of these people kind of nonchalantly said, well, yeah, there's no way to tell what someone has. But you didn't say that to the person. You said they had this condition. You didn't say, well, there's no science behind any of psychiatry. The entire basis of pharmacological approach to psychiatry is fraud. It's complete myth. There's not a single study ever done to prove that you have any science in your entire field. Plus, you've engaged in barbaric practices like lobotomies and electroconvulsive therapy. Wait till you see the responses. And then wait till you see, remember last year, this past 12 months, I led a demonstration in front of the American Psychiatric Association's annual conference. And the interviews that we were able to get, asking him, people from all over the world, is there any basis to determining what a person has? And the answer was no. Okay, fair enough. If you say there's no basis that is objective in determining a person's brain chemical imbalance, hence associating it with a condition, then why are you telling 12 million children that they have ADD or ADHD when there is no biological basis to prove it? And what you do not consider is what happens when you give a medication that the side effects of the medication are mania or hyperactivity. You're giving them something that creates the very condition that you say you're treating. And then what happens when we go from zero is the statistical percentage of deaths in 10 to 14-year boys to suicide being the number one, same boys that were on your drugs. And almost all these mass killers everywhere in the world were on your medications. And yet you say it's the gun alone, not the medication. So just remember this, that they're giving you medication in psychiatry that creates the very condition you're supposedly being treated for, and they take no responsibility for it. All of psychiatry, except that which engages in humanistic counseling, psychoanalysis, psychotherapy, that is legitimate and has helped a lot of people. But that just means a clinician sitting and trying to look with the person that's in front of them at the conditions and circumstances in their life that have not worked for them and how to realign a more positive perspective. That does work. But then again, you don't have to be a psychiatrist. We've had elder people throughout history help guide people who are having emotional problems. And by the way, throughout all of history, go back and read some of the writings of Cicero, and you'll see it was also the problems of raising a daughter and the contentiousness and the arguments. It's nothing new. Herpes zoster, a lot of people have that. That's also, by the way, called shingles, is linked to a transient increased risk of stroke and myocardial infarction in the months following initial zoster diagnosis, according to a study out of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine published in PLOS Medicine. They looked at 42,954 Medicare beneficiaries, average age 65, who had herpes zoster diagnosis, and they found enormous amount of stroke involved. So that's what they're saying. Now that's serious, because almost always people are never told, oh, you got herpes, you're going to have an increased risk of a stroke or heart attack. What we could do is start helping people who have these conditions to get on protocols that are known to help reduce their infectivity, reduce outbreaks, and then at the same time give them a pro-heart protocol. It's easy. And therefore, they can still have the virus in their body, or in some times not. I've seen it completely reversed in people, but also you're protecting their heart. From the University of Utah, published in the American Journal of Kidney Disease, quote, a diet high in plant protein is associated with a lower overall death in individuals with chronic kidney disease. And it's a big difference. So, quote, in conclusion, the study suggests that a higher proportion of protein from plant sources is associated with lower mortality in patients with CKD disease. So, that's chronic kidney disease. So, for all of the people you know in this audience who have any problems with their kidney, a plant-based diet is the way to go. In fact, my guest today, and later on the program, Dr. Christine Horner advocates a vegan diet, and that's good. And also, we found one more study here that there's a good research showing that if you wash a wound out or anything that's a problem with the body with soap and water, which hospitals have historically done, that hasn't changed in decades. A new study out of McMaster's University in Canada found better to use saline water. Salt water does it better than soap and water. Just salt water. So from henceforth, learn the importance of cleaning wounds with salt water. That's the latest on that. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us today. I'm going to share some observations, pieces of a puzzle, on what I saw in the presidential debate. And it really wouldn't matter if it was the Democrats or Republicans. At this point, they're both fundamentally the same. There are no progressive, no humanistic, no spiritual platforms, programs, rules at all. Let me give you some examples. Last night, almost all of the presidential candidates focused upon ISIS, Syria, our arms manufacturing, and they all had this message, all of them. We've got to completely rebuild our entire military-industrial complex. We've got to pump enormous amounts of money in there because what we have is just inadequate. Really? I wonder who's fact-checking. Well, the fact is that the military-industrial complex will get approximately, in total this year, about $1.6 trillion. Officially above the line is about $660 billion. But then all these other fighting of wars and covert operations, national security, that's all added on to that. We have the largest military, most advanced military, the most battleships, the most airplanes, the most missiles, the most nuclear warheads of any country in the world. In fact, if you took all the other countries of the world combined, we're bigger. So we're bigger than China and Russia and India and France and England and Germany and all the others combined. And how much value is this? Well, the fact is that most of the things being created today are simply antiquated before they're finished. So it's not about getting us something we could use that would defend us. It's about feeding the military-industrial complex private contracting firms, of which there are over 200,000 companies engaged in business that feed off the public dole. But here's the side of the issue they didn't tell you. This is from Larry Schwartz, Multinet. Five outrageously expensive and useless defense projects you and I are paying for. Republican candidates for president have long said, you know, and this is their song, that that they want to spend more of our tax money on military, and especially ISIS. Here's what we have spent money on, and here's the failure of it. The F-35 fighter jet, there you are, Bernie Sanders, biggest supporter in the world of that. Oh, I forgot. Some of your Ben and Jerry cows might see that, but no one else is going to benefit from it. The people up in Vermont, they make some money off them. Where the politician can brag about jobs, then they get those votes. Produced by Lockheed Martin, which began designing the jet in the 1990s, the F-35 is scheduled to replace practically all the tactical jets in the Air Force, the Marines, and some of the Navy. The jet is composed of thousands of parts, and those parts are produced separately in 46 different states, and several of these jets have already been delivered. Meanwhile, the software has malfunctioned, jets have caught fire on the runway, and in June of 2014, the entire fleet was grounded. Since 2007, the F-35 fleet has grounded 13 times, the entire fleet. The design of the plane may become overly complex, as all the military branches demanded more and more features on the basic design, hence their structural flaws. Quote, the F-35 is a dog, overweight and underpowered, says Wislow Wheeler, director of the Strauss Military Reform Project at the Project for Government Oversight in Washington. And how much have we wasted on this? Well, consider this. The Pentagon expects to order 2,500 of them in the coming decades, and how much does it cost? $400 million a plane. It'll be over $1.5 trillion. We've spent over $500 billion. That would be enough to de-ghettoize all of America. All of America. Then we have the M1 Abrams tanks. And the Ohio senator who will support, with support from senators where the parts are made, says, quote, that's nice. It's let's build more of them. And so a couple thousand tanks are parked in the desert, and over $500 billion has been spent to build these vehicles that have gone nowhere. But for the contractors got the money, and who then paid the legislators when they got out of office, or their aides, or procurement officers, or admiralty, it's good for them. So we got all these tanks, $500 billion worth. So Governor Christie, your idea was shoot down Russian planes, confront them, and start World War III, and then really build up nuke. Everyone wanted to build up nuke. Have any of you people done any homework at all? Are you capable at the intellectual level of actually reading a study? Do you have the patience, or do sociopathic personalities become so impatient they have to have maladaptive technocrats from Yale and Harvard and Stanford and the other universities that create these monsters tell you what they mean? Fact, we now have the largest military arsenal in the world of nuclear warheads. Fact, Obama's already scheduled to put over $1 trillion into new and improvement of warheads. For what reason? Because someone's making money from it. So you're going to what? Say that you're more of a killer than he is, so you want to put $2 trillion in it? And exactly who are you going to use these on? Did you say as part of our funding and support for a completely corrupt, totally corrupt, 100,000% corrupt Pakistani government, that you would have them first decommission and we would remove all their nuclear warheads? No. Did you demand Israel identify its nuclear capacity and sign in on our agreements? No. How about India? No. So you give weapons and support to countries that could use them, but there's no criteria that they have to decommission. Have you made any effort to maybe get rid of the nukes? No, you just want more. Watching this spectacle and then hearing the fascists on Fox Network was like taking some starving rabid dogs and throwing them raw meat. It was disgusting. So, more tanks sitting in the desert. The JLENS's, almost $3 billion, has been spent so far developing a cruise missile drone low-flying airplane defense system for the U.S. called the Joint Land Attack Cruise Missile Defense Elevated Net Sensor System. And defense contractor Raytheon, boy, they have a lot of lobbyists, and they've spent a lot of money around Washington. In fact, you know when they're in town because the legislators come running out every morning and say, did the lobbyists go by? And they have a wheelbarrow. You can actually see it in Georgetown, I think, waiting there for people to put money in the wheelbarrow. I'll tell you, Washington, D.C. is just the most septic, toxic environment ever. It's just a creepy, degenerate place. And yet you vote for these clowns. You trust what they say. You believe they have integrity, honesty. There's not an honest word that I've seen come out of any of these people's mouths. So, yeah, and how about Pennsylvania coal? Not every zombie costs $500 billion. Some cost a bit less, but they're nevertheless zombies. The Pennsylvania coal boondoggle, which has been going on since the 1960s, is a case in point. Every year, the Pentagon spends around $17 million to heat its Kaiser German military bases. About 1.5 million of that goes towards several thousand tons of coal from Pennsylvania that is shipped to Rotterdam, loaded on rail cars, and moved to Germany. That's because by congressional fiat, the local German utility is required to burn expensive Pennsylvania coal instead of local coal. You think it can't happen? Everything in Washington that's insane happens. Now, how about our military defense system? That was Ronald Reagan. The controversial Star Wars missile defense system, a futuristic program that would shoot down Soviet ICBM headed towards U.S. before the nukes could destroy their targets? Well, never mind that the technology wasn't there. The Missile Defense Agency was born, charged with developing a workable system, and continues to this day. So far, the agency has spent over $10 billion and counting unsuccessfully developing a missile defense system. They've done everything. None of it works. But they're spending billions of dollars on it. Now, that's just on the military side. Does anyone figure that maybe it makes sense to do a diplomatic approach? Maybe we should look at why these conflicts exist. And every single one of them was lying. They all said ISIS was created by Obama and Hillary Clinton. No, do your homework. You had in Syria, you had a famine. The documents now from WikiLeaks show that the United States was funding and putting in provocateurs and demonstrators and saboteurs. The sarin gas that was mentioned last night, that did not come from Syria. That came through Turkey, and there are documents on that now showing that, plus an article by Seymour Hersh showing that the Syrian rebels used the sarin gas, and that it was proven through British analysis that it was not Syria. Well, then why don't you get it right? It was your funded rebels. Look at John McCain. It was his friends over there who are the terrorist. And we're funding him. We have been funding him. And they mentioned Saudi Arabia. How we have to protect these people. You're protecting the country that is financing, training, and providing safe haven for the terrorists. These are Sunnis. You tried to say that Iran was the problem, wanting to create Iran territory. Iran is the only pure Shia nation on the planet. The rest are Sunni. And you have rabid Wahhabist, or the Salafist. And they're all coming from Saudi Arabia. So they give us $40, $50 billion for arms sales, and then we protect them. Otherwise, long ago, they'd have been overthrown. So it's not Iran that's invaded countries. You didn't mention any of the things that would make a difference. For example, you didn't mention the 16 to 20 million refugees or people who are food-deprived, water-deprived, and are now seeking some form of safe haven from the war in that area that is led by, financed by, and controlled by Saudi Arabia. You didn't mention community centers, the schools, and the hospitals bombed in Yemen by Saudi Arabia. So that the former corrupt head of Yemen, who's in Saudi Arabia, could take back his throne. No mention of this. These people are functionally illiterate. Now, Donald Trump is totally illiterate. I don't even know how he can get on a stage. He's just a buffoon. But now you have these people who claim that they know something. They don't. Here's from Juan Cole, 10 signs the U.S. is the most corrupt country in the world. One, the rich are well placed to bribe our politicians, they do, and reduce taxes on the rich, they do that too. And the non-entity like Donald Trump got filthy rich via tax loopholes and is now trying to buy the presidency, the way the Supreme Court got rid of campaign finance reform and allowed open, unlimited buying of elections is the height of corruption. Note that despite his supposed populism, Trump never talks about the unfairness of our current tax system. Instead, dividing the ruling working and middle class Americans by stirring racial and religious hatreds. As it stands, 400 American billionaires are worth $2 trillion, or more than the bottom 150 million Americans combined. Number two, money and corruption have seeped so far into our media system that people can be a straight face assert, or with a straight face assert, that scientists aren't sure human carbon emissions are causing global warming. Fox Cable News is among the more corrupt institutions in American society, purveying outright lies for the benefit of the billionaire class. Even Cotter, its economy based on natural gas, freely admits that the challenge of human-induced climate change, American politicians like Jim Inhofe are openly ridiculed when they travel to Europe for their know-nothingness on climate. Number three, instead of having short, publicly funded political campaigns with limited and free advertising, as a number of Western European nations do, the U.S. has long political campaigns in which candidates are dunned big bucks for advertising. They are therefore forced to spend much of their time fundraising, which is to say seeking bribes. And all American politicians are basically on the take. Though many are honorable people, they are forced into it by the system. Number four, the politicians can be bribed to reduce regulation of industries like banking, which is called regulatory capture, which means they will be bribed. They will bribe anyone. Billions are spent and 3,000 lobbyists employed by bankers alone to remove cumbersome rules, so they have zero oversight. Thus, political corruption enabled financial corruption, in some cases legalized it, and without regulators and regulation and government auditing, the finance sector went wild and engaged in corrupt practices that caused 2008 crash. Number five, the chief villains of the 2008 meltdowns, from which 90% of Americans have not recovered, have not been prosecuted, is itself a form of corruption. Number six, the U.S. military budget is bloated and enormous, bigger than the military budgets of the next 12 nations combined. What isn't usually realized is that perhaps half of it is spent on outsourced services, not on military equipment at all. Number seven, the U.S. has a vast gulag, 2.2 million prisoners in jail and penitentiary. There is an increasing tendency for prisons to be privatized, and this tendency is corrupting the system. Number eight, the National Security Agency's domestic spying was a form of corruption in and of itself and leads itself to corruption. With some 4 million government employees and private contractors engaged in this surveillance, it is highly unlikely that various forms of insider trading and other corrupt practices are not being committed. And number nine, as for insider trading, it turns out Congress undid much of the law it hastily passed, and so now they can engage in insider trading. It's completely legal for a member of Congress to engage in it. Number 10, asset forfeiture. The drug wars corrupting police departments and judiciary. Last year, by the way, American police stole from American people more than all other criminal activity in the United States. So you could say they're the largest criminals. And this is not for people that they arrested. It's just they can steal whatever they want. So that's from Juan Cole. Here's something else that was not discussed. 75% of high school seniors are on heroin, started with prescription painkillers. From Kerry Welder, quote, a preliminary analysis has concluded that over 75% of high school students who use heroin previously used prescription painkillers. And that was published in the Drug and Alcohol Dependence, and from an official survey, and researchers from New York University, Langone Medical Center, and nursing school did this research. So, did anyone talk about going after the pharmaceutical industry for creating so many opiates that when you get hooked on these, you can then have a lot of problems getting off, and it can lead to street drugs. Not a word. Documents published by WikiLeaks reveal the National Security Agency's corporate priorities. And then it goes into this article showing how we, the United States, and our national security agencies have been spying on every government in the world. We've engaged in cyber attacks on their systems. We have looked at their proprietary information. We have stolen their proprietary information. We have given what we found in other companies around the world to American companies. Not a word. This is the, you hear occasionally about, well, the Russians shot down someone or blew up a building and killed some civilians. And who tells us this? It's called the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights. Okay, according to Stephen McMillan of Activist Post, This is a large group, what, 1,000, 2,000 activists working in Syria on the ground? No, it's just one guy in a basement working for himself in England. Mm-hmm. Quote, one of the most widely cited organizations in Western media pertaining to the Syrian conflict is the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights. As Tony Cartolucci astutely noted back in 2012 in his article, the West Syrian narrative based on a guy in a British apartment, the Western media portrays this group as an impartial, highly skilled, professional group of people based in Syria. No, that is true. It's just one guy. And we found out his real name. It's not the name that he's given. And we were told by the media his name is Ramni Abdulrahman, and its real name is Osama Suleiman. So he directs one group himself, and yet he is cited by all the media, and it's always a pro-Western slant on everything he performs for them. Here are some of the issues they did not take on. Oh, by the way, they talked about building the wall. I'll build a bigger wall. We'll build the biggest wall. Why didn't you mention the H-1B visas? Here's the number of Americans who have been impacted by the H-1B visa and all other visas, not illegal, but legally brought in, primarily from India, highly educated, with advanced degrees, and they can get into important jobs. 7.2 million. 7.2 million. Wow. That's a lot of people coming from other countries to take jobs of Americans. But let me explain how it works. It works this way. You get a good education. You go to work into an American company. You work for 20, 25 years. You build up seniority. You are getting good pay, good benefits. You're stable. You can afford a quality of life and a standard of living, which you deserve. And then one day you're told that you've got to train a person, a nice person, don't have anything against the person, but you've got a master's, they've got a PhD, you're making $185,000, they're willing to work for $40,000 and no benefits. And you've got to train them, and then you're let go. We're not talking about migrant workers, we're talking about highly educated, very skilled Americans who've had seniority and now they've lost their job. 7.4 total work visas issued to individuals in just the last 5 years. So no mention of that. Now, finally, let me tell you a few things that I believe should have been discussed, must be discussed, and no one, Democrat or Republican, are discussing it. Repeal the Glass-Steagall Act and take control of the banking industries. If need be, break up all the large banks that have engaged in casino capitalism that do not benefit the rest of the economy. Remember, they've lied to you. They've told you that if the big banks fail, the economy fails. That's not true. If the big banks fail, the investors, the bondholders, the stakeholders fail, as they should. But it doesn't impact anyone else because they're not giving you the money. So break it up and reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act. Ban trading in commodities that are essential to life, meaning you do not allow someone to profit off food, land, and water. Stop trading in credit default swaps. Outlaw de-swap soft and derivatives. Stop the Federal Reserve from giving any more no-interest loans to banks and corporations. Declare a moratorium on all home foreclosures. Create a national food program to see that the 50 million Americans who are hungry are fed and 18 million children who go to bed food malnourished are given food. De-ghettoize America's program for food distribution, bypassing corporations and working directly with communities. Create a program for reforestation, employing the youth to plant trees and hedgerows, and use skilled workers to repair bridges, levees, waterways, and gas mains and other parts of our infrastructure. Forgive all student loans, period. It's a one-time $1.2 trillion give back, but in replace of that, anyone who wants to go to a private school, then that's their business. You want to go to a private school? If you think you have an advantage over going to Yale rather than a state university, fine. But all state schools should be free and let the private schools do what they want. But you can't have it both ways. You can't say, I want to go to this school, but it's going to put me in debt. Then go to the other school that doesn't. If you think that by going to Harvard, you're going to get a better education with better teachers and better reading material and better tests and a better job opportunity, only one of those is true. It's all based upon the illusion that you're a better student because you graduated from Harvard. We have outstanding teachers, and the same identical standards for accreditation are necessary. They don't have one accreditation for Harvard and another one for a state university. They all have to meet the same standards. Everything else is a matter of our illusion of differentiation. We gave $21 trillion to major corporations at zero interest. We forgave their debt. We cleaned up their bad assets. Surely we could do this to forgive the students their debt and let them start life without being in debt peonage. I believe that we should also talk about the repeal of laws that prevent student loan holders from declaring bankruptcy, support senior citizens with free community hospital service and food co-ops, offer small businesses zero interest loans with no payment for 2 years, providing that each $1 million up to $5 million earned or borrowed, the business must hire five employees at a living wage of a minimum of $20 an hour plus health, and that would put 14 million Americans back to work at a living wage. Close and decommission all nuclear power plants and shift investment to support geothermal, solar, wind, and other energies that are non-polluting. Ban all private funding of any election. Take all corporate money out of politics. Demilitarize our forces around the world and close military bases. Cease gas hydrofracking and all offshore drilling. Audit the Federal Reserve. Close the Federal Reserve. And bring down all these security departments. Eliminate Homeland Security and 15 of the 16 agencies involved in collecting data. Outlaw all spying on Americans, unless you have a known or suspected terrorist. Allow all corporations that cannot be maintained to go through structured bankruptcy. No more bailouts. Eliminate the entire income tax system and have one flat tax that no one can get out of. All corporations must pay. Right now, the big corporations pay nothing. Eliminate the IRS. Begin an independent audit of every bureaucracy in our government. Bring them down to where they serve the people, but do not threaten and dominate the people. Have a special group of historians and academicians who will look at all of our laws, because about 80% of our laws should not exist. They're bad. Stop using the State Department to force Monsanto's genetically engineered foods on other nations. Ban lobbying from state and federal offices to legislators. Create a universal health care. Include every school curriculum in America, a program on disease prevention. Open up halfway houses for returning vets from conflict zones who have post-traumatic stress so they can get the holistic treatment they need and be reunited with their family. Give corporations a 2-to-1 tax break if they donate to charities within communities to de-ghettoize those communities, to bring affordable housing into those communities, stop gentrification of the communities, and have community outreach centers and focus upon what a community needs in order to be vital and healthy, and then bring that to that community. Acknowledge the dangers of depleted uranium in all conflict zones and ban it, and then go into those communities and try to, as best as possible, and educate the public and clean it up. Disband the FDA, the USDA, the National Institutes of Health, the CDC, the National Institutes of Aging, the National Institutes of Mental Health, the Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, and replace them with independent groups of independent scientists and oversight by educated lay groups, where we look at something for what it really does and not who is paying to have it done. Allow no money to come from any special group to any federal agency. Those are some things that were not discussed at all, nor were voter rights discussed, workplace and family policies discussed. We did not discuss the recession and what to do to get people back to work. We did not discuss women's rights. We did not discuss Media Matters, the list of the Wall Street bailouts, civil liberties that are under attack. We did not touch on any of these, and we should. And we did not discuss at all. They didn't even mention the Trans-Pacific Partnership and other trade deals, nothing about Citizens United that most Americans oppose, nothing about prison reform, nothing about getting rid of the archaic and stupid war on drugs, nothing about stopping the people from being put into jail because they can't afford to pay a bill. So that's why I am so offended by the corporate structure of our elections, because they control it, they dictate it, and you saw what was not discussed at all. And that which they did discuss, they were functionally illiterate. Back in a moment with my guest. Please stay with us. We're going out to San Diego right now and say hello to Dr. Christine Horner. She is a nationally recognized surgeon, complementary physician, author, and a vocal advocate for natural approaches to women's health. And she was instrumental in passing a national bill signed by President Clinton that required insurance companies to pay for breast reconstruction following mastectomy. And she raised a column for Breast Cancer Wellness Magazine and Wellbella. Nice to have you with us today.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure to be with you.
You've been on the front lines in the fight against breast cancer for several decades, and since the days when you started to research the causes and means to prevent and treat breast cancer, there's been a great deal of new science that points to its fundamental causes, and our knowledge has increased dramatically. And today we know that environmental factors like toxins that we consume daily and are exposed to are contributing to many forms of cancer, including breast cancer, and how our understanding of breast cancer changed during the past 20 years, and what you regard as the leading causes of breast cancer today. Would you share that with us, please?
Sure. So just a little background about me. I worked as a plastic surgeon, and I was doing a lot of breast reconstructive surgery and noticing that my patients were getting younger and younger until finally I was doing women in their 20s. And I thought, okay, something is seriously wrong here. And then my own mom got breast cancer and died from it about 9 months later. So that really spurred me on to really try to find answers. This was 20 years ago, I mean, before there was any conversations about prevention, and I was working with the American Cancer Society at the time as a spokesperson for breast cancer issues and taught to say we have no idea what causes breast cancer and we have no known cure, so the best thing that women can do are mammograms and breast exams in the hopes of catching it early, which did not work for my mom. There's a flaw in that thinking. But so what I did is I went through the medical research, and again, this was 20 years ago, and had no idea what I was going to find. And I literally found thousands of studies back then that point out exactly why we have a breast cancer epidemic and everything that we're doing to contribute to it and the things that we traditionally don't do in this culture that are highly protective, and they were all natural. So foods, supplements, herbs, lifestyle choices, these are all the things that I was taught in my medical training didn't matter. They lied to me. But there's been, since the time that I did that original research and initially reported about it in my book called Waking the Warrior Goddess, Dr. Christine Horner's program to protect against and fight breast cancer that came out in 2005 and actually won the best health book of the year that year. But since then, I've come out with a third edition, and there was, I added 150 pages to that edition.
We know you have the book, and we're happy about that, but I'd like for you to now to share what's in it, the book.
Sure, absolutely. Just saying there's been a real explosion, you know, of research in this area. So what the book includes is everything that I could find that has a statistically significant influence. So that means either the things you need to avoid or the things that you need to favor. And it's all in the categories of our diet, our lifestyle, environment.
Let's try to be specific.
Sure.
Go through the categories of first what you believe they should avoid, and then please what they should include.
Sure. So the major things that people need to avoid, as you had mentioned, is toxins. And these toxins can come in our food, and they can come in our environment, principally. So, you know, the standard American diet is really a recipe for breast cancer, prostate cancer, colon cancer, heart disease, and ill health in general, obesity, as we know. So most people that are eating the fast foods, which unfortunately is the majority of Americans, every single part of that fast food meal, from the burgers and the carbs and the French fries and so on, all these things are carcinogenic and, you know, contribute to it. In addition to that, you know, the way that we grow our food, and particularly if we're talking about animals, you know, too, it's very, very bad growing practices, and we're using all sorts of pesticides and herbicides and growth factors, and all of these things are known to help to contribute to the growth of various different kinds of cancers, and including breast cancer. So, again, our food can be a huge source of it, and instead what you want to do is to favor a plant-based diet, organically grown fruits, vegetables, whole grains, nuts, seeds, and omega-3 fatty acids is kind of the secret for preventing every single kind of chronic disease. Now, in addition to that, there's, you know, things in your environment. So within your house, I mean, it's pretty alarming where we've been so unconscious about our practices as far as building materials, personal care products, cleaning products, those kinds of things. Virtually everything has really turned into unbelievable toxic chemicals that are used in all of those processes. Now, the wonderful thing is that it's pretty well recognized. So there's been companies that have established themselves to give us non-toxic alternatives for everything. So I always say, just assume that everything's toxic, and because it pretty much is, and look for the non-toxic alternatives. So we have you know, non-toxic building supplies, cleaning supplies, personal care, you know, supplies, but to always be really conscientious of that, because we definitely know that these chemicals are things that can contribute to cancers. And when you combine the chemicals, that's another really scary thing, is that, you know, when we do studies, you could say, all right, we're going to look at one chemical in isolation, but that's not the way the human body is exposed to it. It's exposed with multiple chemicals. And so there's been a number of studies looking at what happens if you actually expose a person to multiple chemicals rather than just one, and we find that they have synergistic reactions, meaning that they're making each other more toxic than what they are alone. So very, very important, you know, to avoid those things. Obesity, you know, we've got just an absolute crisis in this country with people being overweight. It's now 2/3 of individuals. They just came out with new obesity reports, and the Hispanic population, for instance, is about 43% obese, not just overweight, and African Americans up to 50%. I mean, it's just crazy. And obesity is something that we know that definitely increases the risk of many different kinds of chronic diseases, and including cancers and breast cancer in particular. So fat cells produce estrogen, and we know that estrogen is a hormone that helps to fuel breast cancer. So obesity itself is creating excess amounts of estrogen, and the estimates are that probably 40% of postmenopausal breast cancers, that obesity is one of the major factors with it. In addition, just because you have excess fat cells, we know that those fat cells are producing inflammatory proteins. So you're kind of, by definition, you're in an inflamed state. And inflammation is something that's been shown to play a key role in initiating and fueling virtually every single chronic disease. And breast cancer, prostate cancer, and colon cancer are actually tumors that inflammation plays such a huge role in it, that just by taking an anti-inflammatory, and there's a number of studies looking at pharmaceutical anti-inflammatories, which I wouldn't recommend, but what they found is that the incidence of those cancers was cut in half just by taking a pharmaceutical anti-inflammatory. Now, I recommend herbal ones, you know, instead, that you know, don't have horrible side effects, including potential death. Drinking alcohol that's another thing that has a direct linear relationship to the incidence of breast cancer. So one drink a day increases the risk by 11%, two drinks by 22 to 40%, and three drinks by 33 to 70%. And that's because estrogen or alcohol increases the level of estrogen in the body. It also disrupts the enzymes in the liver, so you're not detoxifying toxins and estrogen as you would be, and it destroys a B vitamin called folate. And folate is involved in the DNA repair mechanisms in our body, and when you're low in folate, then your DNA cannot repair itself. It's getting damaged all the time from oxygen-free radicals and toxins and various other substances, but we have these repair mechanisms in place that will recognize it and take care of it. But if your folate levels are low, then your DNA cannot repair adequately. So people who drink alcohol and have low folic acid levels have a very high incidence of breast cancer. Now, the good news is there was a study that was done where they gave women folic acid or folate to take and then had them drink alcohol, and they found that the ill effects were completely eradicated for just if you had one glass a day or up to two. But beyond that, forget about it. It's just extraordinarily damaging. So the lesson there is to, if you're going to have a glass of wine now and again, make sure that you take folic acid supplement with that, and never drink more than three glasses of alcohol a day, because it's just, you know, too damaging.
Good information. We just have a minute left. If you were to name five nutrients or herbs or botanicals that you believe should complement a good plant-based diet, what would they be?
Sure. So the first one is a mushroom formula called AHCC. It stands for Active Hexose Correlated Compound, and it's out of Japan. So AHCC actually has been a formula tested to show that it helps to support every single cell type in the immune system. So our immune system is what helps to keep us well, and it does it so effectively, it lowers the risk of many different kinds of cancers. And if you have cancer in Japan and go for treatments in the hospital, they will actually treat you with AHCC because the survival statistics are so much better. So that's a really important one to help to keep your immune system healthy. The herb turmeric, there's over 8,000 studies on turmeric now, and this is considered the number one anti-cancer herb. Many studies being done here in this country. MD Anderson, they found over 150 different ways that it works and 30 different anti-cancer effects. So that one I think everybody should be taking. Green tea is actually, we hear about it being a health drink. It absolutely is, and it protects against about 11 different kinds of cancers, and it has synergistic reactions with turmeric. So if you take the two of them together in a supplement, then what they find is that green tea will enhance the anti-cancer effects of turmeric by three times, and turmeric will enhance the anti-cancer effects of green tea by eight times. So you can really take advantage of these synergistic qualities. Vitamin D is another one. So vitamin D we find is low in most disease states, and that is definitely true for breast cancer. And there's been a number of prospective studies where they've given supplemental vitamin D and found that it cuts the risk of breast cancer and colon cancer in half. And omega-3 fatty acids is another one that I think everybody should be taking. It's just fundamentally important for the function of your entire body. And it, too, has tremendous anti-cancer effects. And it's, of all of the substances that have been tested, they found that omega-3 fatty acids has the highest anti-inflammatory properties of any of them. So I think that's extraordinarily important to include those two.
Well, thank you. We appreciate these input. And my guest, Dr. Christine Horner, H-O-R-N-E-R. Her website is drchristinehorner.com. Her newest book is Waking the Warrior Goddess, Programmed to Protect and Fight Against Breast Cancer. All the best. We'll be filming you in a week or two, I understand, out there in California.
Yeah.
Good. We look forward to that.
Good.
And all the best. And we're out of time, everyone, so thank you for listening. We'll have more for you tomorrow.